When they reached the hatch, they found a small honor guard of Royal Space Marines waiting down on the hangar floor. The captain, a striking woman with narrow green eyes and dark full lips, stepped to the foot of the boarding ramp and bowed formally.
"Welcome, Princess. Her Majesty said to bring you up at once."
The captain gestured behind her, where about 20 meters away, a pair of hammered erodium doors guarded an antique mechanical lift.
"If you'll follow me, your escort will join us."
Hans scowled and joined Leia in not descending the ramp.
"Our escort?"
The captain shot an annoyed glance in his direction, but reacted as any well-trained Hapen officer would when questioned by a foreign diplomat's male staff. She ignored him. Han clenched his teeth and waited patiently for Leia to take the lead. Bucking 4,000 years of Hapen tradition would not convince Tenel Ka of anything. Leia must have really been off her game, because it took a couple of seconds before she said,
"We came alone, Captain. What escort are you referring to?"
The captain scowled and was about to answer when a slender figure in a black suit stepped into view. After the long flight from Kashyyyk, the circles under her eyes were even deeper, and her curly blonde hair was matted flat with helmet sweat.
"That would be me,"
Tahiri said. Han frowned, and Leia asked the question,
"What are you doing here?"
"I came to see what you were doing,"
Tahiri replied. Han noticed that her hand was hovering near the lightsaber hanging from her belt.
"And I don't think I'm going to like the answer."
"Then go away and don't ask."
Han had the sinking feeling he was beginning to understand why Tahiri had followed them, and just maybe how Luke had gotten killed.
"And I do it real fast, before my suspicions get the better of me."
The Hapen captain frowned at Tahiri.
"You told Approach Control that you were with the Solos."
"In a way, I am,"
Tahiri said.
"I'm here to detain them."
Han knew better than to reach for his blaster when a Jedi was practically holding her lightsaber, but he had plenty of time to step behind the bulkhead and reach for the door control. Unfortunately, Leia was already starting down the ramp.
"Detain us?"
Leia demanded.
"Don't tell me you're with Jason. Somebody has to be."
Tahiri remained near a landing strut, about 3 meters to one side of the boarding ramp.
"He's only doing what's necessary to save the Alliance."
"You're too smart to buy that."
Han caught up to Leia and took her arm, then continued to address Tahiri.
"What's he got on you anyway?"
"On me?"
Tahiri looked away.
"Nothing. I'm only doing what's right. Anakin would want me to support Jason."
This was too much for Leia.
"Anakin?"
She jerked free of Han's grasp, then stepped onto the hangar floor, sputtering something about Anakin never approving of torture and coups. Tahiri reached for her lightsaber, and Han realized the young woman was about to learn a very hard lesson about bad timing. And so was the honor guard captain, whose eyes widened with alarm as Leia snapped her own lightsaber off her belt.
"Put those weapons away, now!"
The captain reached for a blaster pistol and started to step between Leia and Tahiri, until Han jumped down and pulled her back by the collar.
"Lady, you really don't want to..."
Han let the warning trail off as the captain spun on him, holding her blaster pistol under his nose.
"Okay, maybe you do."
He raised his hands and backed away.
"Be my guest."
A pair of lightsabers sizzled to life behind the woman, and sparks flew as Leia and Tahiri brought their weapons together. By the time the captain spun back around, the two Jedi were locked in a furious battle of flashing blades and flying feet.
"Stop!"
the captain ordered. She motioned to her squad, who instantly flipped their blaster rifle power settings to stun and leveled the barrels at the combatants.
"You will stop, or we will open fire!"
Leia landed a jaw-cracking elbow under Tahiri's chin, and Tahiri slammed a knee into Leia's ribs. The captain cursed under her breath, then turned to her Marines.
"Hold on,"
Han said.
"That's a really bad..."
"Fire at will,"
the captain ordered. Han dropped, barely reaching the floor before a flurry of stun bolts flashed toward the fight, then reversed directions as the two Jedi batted the attacks back toward their sources. The Marines collapsed in moans and spasms, the red-headed captain cracking skulls with Han as she landed atop him. He rolled out from beneath her, cursing and rubbing his head. The hangar was ringing with security alarms, and royal guards were pouring from hidden crannies and secret passages, but the two Jedi remained oblivious. Leia connected with a vicious thrust kick that bent Tahiri backward over a landing strut crossbar. Tahiri grunted and pointed at a loose blaster rifle, bringing it tumbling into Leia from behind, catching her between the shoulder blades and knocking her to the floor. Leia flipped onto her back and brought her legs up over her head, landing on one foot and pirouetting straight into the attack, her blade level with Tahiri's neck.
"Wait!" Han cried. "Not my strut!"
Leia accelerated her pirouette, trying to land the attack before Tahiri had time to block. And that was when Han began to realize his wife was really serious about this. She wasn't in it to just teach the younger woman a lesson.
"Leia, no!"
The plea made Leia hesitate just long enough for Tahiri to block. Then Leia was on her feet again, keeping Tahiri pinned against the strut, beating down her guard, slipping in knee and elbow strikes with a speed and ferocity that only a Barabel-trained fighter could achieve.
"Leia, stop!"
Han yelled.
"You want to kill her?"
Leia continued to press the attack, and Han realized that was exactly what she wanted to do. She had found a handy target for all her rage, just as he had when he blamed Anakin for Chewbacca's death, and she was determined to make Tahiri pay for what had happened to Luke, and for what Jason had become. Han snatched the blaster pistol from the captain's hand, and hoping to startle his wife back to her senses, sent a bolt zinging past her. It glanced off the Falcon and left a black smoking furrow in the hull. Apparently, the captain had not set her blaster to stun. Leia glanced away just long enough for Tahiri to land a spinning back kick that sent her staggering away. Han sprang up to grab her. He was taking his life in his hands, but he knew Leia could never forgive herself if she killed Tahiri over a stupid comment and a couple of bad choices. He wrapped his arms around Leia's shoulders and pulled her back. Then, felt the air leave his chest and his feet leave the floor as she instinctively slammed an elbow into his ribs and started to throw him.
"Whoa, Leia!"
he groaned.
"It's me!"
He felt the tension leave her body, and his feet returned to the floor. Then Tahiri started to advance, her haggard eyes filled with malice and anger.
"Don't do it!"
Han ordered. He pulled Leia aside, and when she deactivated the lightsaber, stepped between her and Tahiri.
"Don't you dare!"
Tahiri stopped 2 paces away, her lightsaber still ignited, glancing from Leia to Han, and looking like a sabacc player trying to decide whether to fold or raise.
"You think this is what Anakin would want?"
Han prompted.
"His mother and his girlfriend trying to kill each other?"
"I certainly don't,"
a female voice said, coming up behind Han, and speaking over the drone of her own lightsaber.
"And I won't have it in my hangar."
The anger in Tahiri's face quickly changed to embarrassment. She deactivated her blade and bowed, holding herself parallel to the floor.
"I apologize, Your Majesty. I didn't believe they would resist."
"Resist what?"
Tenel Ka demanded.
"Tahiri was trying to arrest us,"
Han explained. He turned to find Tenel Ka behind him.
"And her timing was really bad."
Tenel Ka deactivated her own lightsaber.
"You may explain, Captain Solo."
"Sure," Han said. "We think Luke just died. Leia felt it in the Force."
Tenel Ka's face fell, her expression morphing from shock to disbelief to sympathy in about a second and a half. She turned to Leia.
"We are terribly sorry, Princess."
Tenel Ka didn't ask how it had happened, probably because she realized her question would only bring more grief, and Leia wouldn't know anyway.
"The palace and its staff are entirely at your disposal. Please feel free to ask for anything you need."
Leia nodded, but failed to get out her words of thanks and reach for Han's arm.
"Thanks, Your Majesty,"
he said.
"We appreciate that."
"Of course you mean while they're under arrest here," Tahiri said. "There is still an Alliance detention warrant out for them.
And I've already informed Colonel Solo that in recognition of their heroic service during our recent troubles, his parents have sanctuary everywhere within the consortium, especially within the Royal Hangar."
"I apologize, Your Majesty," Tahiri said. "I can't permit..."
"You cannot permit?"
Tenel Ka stepped past Han to confront Tahiri directly, followed by enough royal guards to overpower 10 Jedi.
"This is the Hapen Consortium, Jedi Bela. I govern here, not Jason, not the Alliance, and certainly not you. Now, tell me, were you injured when you attacked Princess Leia?"
Tahiri's jaw dropped.
"I'm the one who was attacked,"
I'll take that as a no.
Tennille Ka turned to a black-haired officer at her back.
In that case, Jedi Bela is ready to travel. Return her to a Stealth X and have her escorted out of Haven space, Major Espara.
Espara inclined her head. As you wish, Majesty.
And if I may make a suggestion? Suggestions are always welcome, Major,
Tennille Ka said.
You know that. Thank you, Majesty. It might be wise to keep the Stealth X cloaking unit here on Hapes, just to be certain Jedi Bela doesn't slip away from our escort.
You can't!
Tahiri objected.
That technology is Jedi property. Colonel Solo would look very unfavorably on that.
Espara was ready with a smooth response.
And yet the Jedi deserted the Alliance at Kuat, while Colonel Solo is attacking them at Kashyyyk, and you are here, attempting to arrest the Solos on behalf of the Alliance.
She turned to Tennille Ka.
The war has grown so very confusing. It's difficult to tell whose side we're on at the moment.
Tennille Ka's brow rose. Then after thinking for a moment, she nodded.
An excellent point, Major Espara. But I want Jedi Bela gone now. Keep the entire Stealth X and supply her with a messenger skiff instead.
Espara smiled.
As you wish, Majesty.
The Major waved her company forward and cautiously disarmed Tahiri. Han pulled Leia to his side.
How are you doing?
Leia nodded.
Better. Thanks for...
She looked away, watching Espara's guards lead Tahiri off, then finished.
For stopping me. Yes,
Tennille Ka said, joining them.
It was very courageous to step between two angry Jedi as you did.
Thanks,
Han said, feeling a little embarrassed.
It was nothing.
Nonetheless, please don't ever do it again. We are quite fond of you with all your limbs.
Tennille Ka smiled and waved them toward the antique lift.
Now, perhaps you would tell me why Tahiri is so eager to keep you from speaking to me.
Because she's been spying on the Jedi for Jason, I think,
Leia said.
And she doesn't want you to hear what he's doing now.
To Han's surprise, Tennille Ka merely nodded.
This is what I was afraid of.
She stepped into the lift compartment and waved the Solos in after her, but held out her hand to stop Espara and the rest of her bodyguards.
You may join us in the anteroom, Major. The Solos pose no danger to me.
Espara nodded and closed the doors. As the lift began to rise, Tennille Ka's eyes grew wet, and her lip began to quiver.
So, the intelligence reports I've been getting from Kashyyyk are true?
She asked.
I'm afraid so,
Leia said.
I wish there was a better way to put this, but there isn't. Jason is burning the planet to the dirt.
A single tear ran down Tennille Ka's cheek.
Why?
Who knows?
Han couldn't figure out why Tennille Ka was taking this so hard. She was acting like Jason was her kid or something.
Because he's Jason and he doesn't like it when people say no to him?
This was too much for Tennille Ka. The tears started to flow more freely, and she touched a button on the wall. The lift stopped immediately, trapping them all inside the small compartment.
Forgive me,
Tennille Ka said, shaking her head in despair.
I don't know what to make of so much sad news.
Leia scowled at Han behind Tennille Ka's back, silently scolding him for being so callous, even if he couldn't figure out what he'd said wrong, then nodded at Tennille Ka, signaling him to fix the mess he'd made. Han laid a tentative hand on Tennille Ka's shoulder, and suddenly she had her head buried in his chest, sobbing as the tough little girl he remembered from the Jedi Academy probably never had. Forgetting for the moment that she was the sovereign of the largest independent realm in the galaxy, he wrapped his arms tight around her and stroked her red hair.
It's okay, kid.
Han looked over her shoulder at Leia, searching for some hint about what to do next. But Leia was only staring at Tennille Ka's back, struggling to hold back her own tears.
We should have found a better way to break it to you. I didn't think losing Luke would hit you so hard.
Tennille Ka muttered something unintelligible into Han's tunic, then pushed herself away, shaking her head.
It's not Luke.
She cast a quick glance at Leia, then added quickly,
I'm very sad to lose him, but it's more than that. It's Jason, too. The galaxy is coming apart around us. and he used to be the one person who seemed strong enough to hold it together.
His methods are a little too brutal, Leia said gently. Tenel Ka nodded.
He promised to make peace with the Jedi. Instead, he tries to arrest you at Mara's funeral and takes over the academy on Ossus. Then he sends Ben to assassinate Cal Omas, and now he burns Kashyyyk.
She shook her head with what seemed equal parts sorrow and disgust.
He took my last fleet, Han. He left Alana and me vulnerable. Us.
You can't trust him, Tenel Ka, Han said. It took us a long time to figure that out, too.
Yes. He has been fooling us all for far too long.
Tenel Ka pulled a small hand mirror from her pocket and began to examine her tear-streaked face.
I think the time has come for someone to do the same to him, don't you?
Han lifted his brow.
Does that mean what I think it means?
That is why you came here, is it not?
Tenel Ka continued to study herself in her mirror.
To convince me to change sides?
At least to withdraw your support, Leia clarified. Given Corellia's recent interference and hate in internal affairs, I'm not certain it's fair to ask you to support the Confederation actively.
Come now, Princess.
Tenel Ka lowered the mirror, her face now perfectly composed.
We both know that if you aren't for Jason, you are against him.
Aboard the Anakin Solo.
In a bubble of white agony sat a being fighting to hold on to itself, to remember that it was human, the child of two Jedi, a young man who had hoped to become a Jedi Knight himself. The pain was trying to rob him of this, tearing at his resolve with a thousand forms of anguish. Acid that licked nerves raw, poison that raised boiling blisters, needles that turned joints into kilns of throbbing inflammation. The only way to end the pain was to surrender to it, to let it melt him down and forge him into something stronger and sturdier and more enduring. Ben understood this. Each moment would bring a new and exquisite agony, as fierce and startling as the last, and the pain would never let him die, or grow numb, or escape into a catatonic oblivion. He understood all this, and still he clung to the knowledge that he was Ben Skywalker, son of Luke and Mara Jade Skywalker, cousin and one-time apprentice to Colonel Jason Solo, who was the murderer of my mother. The last part Ben repeated twice. It was the only way to keep his hate, and he was going to need his hate. Hate would help him escape, and when he escaped, hate would give him the power to kill Jason Solo. The chair, if a pulsing mass of white tendrils tipped with black barbs could be called a chair, tightened its grasp, and a cocoon of yellow energy danced up around Ben. The breath left his lungs in a long staccato scream, and he felt his muscles spasm and heard his teeth grinding. Then everything went white, and he sank into the timeless anguish of convulsion. Later, when Ben's nerves had become desensitized and required a new torment, the darkness returned to the dark again, and he grew aware of someone standing in front of his chair. How exactly he did this in the unlit cell, he did not know. He could see nothing, and the Force had been lost to him since the pain began. Perhaps he had smelled something foul, or heard a boot click in a familiar way. But Ben knew. He lifted his chin, as much as his thorny restraints would allow, and said,
"Hello, Jason.
I asked you to call me Colonel." Ben gathered a mouthful of coppery blood and spat it in the direction of the voice. He did not hear it hit anything. "Good." Jason's voice had shifted, and now it came from somewhere near Ben's ear. "Hang on to your hate. It will help you endure." The voice drew closer. "I couldn't hate, and it nearly destroyed me."
"My hate will destroy you," Ben said.
"Perhaps, given time," Jason allowed. "But it will take decades to develop the power to confront me openly, and I hope you understand the futility of trying to take me by surprise. Surely your circumstances have made that painfully clear." A soft chittering sounded near where Jason's hand was, and the tendrils holding Ben captive sprouted tiny bristles and injected droplets of venom under his skin.
His flesh immediately began to swell and nettle, and as the tendrils constricted, to split and weep ichor. The darkness dissolved into a fiery curtain of pain, and Jason asked, "Do you want to die yet, Ben? All you have to do is ask."
"More lies!" Ben gasped. "You enjoy this!"
"Enjoy it?" Jason sounded genuinely hurt. "You know that's not true. I don't enjoy any of this."
An illumination panel flickered to life in the ceiling. Ben's eyes ached as they struggled to adjust, and he began to make out the shapes of a thorn-coated bed on the adjacent wall, and a tendril-draped rack in the far corner. The chamber was larger than he had imagined, at least 10 meters across. To one side, a large door opened into a cavernous darkness that could only be one of the clandestine hangars hidden in the substructure of the Anakin Solo's forward weapons turrets. Jason moved into Ben's line of sight, dressed in his usual GAG uniform with high boots and black cloak.
"How can you believe I want to do this? I'm doing this to save you."
"Save me?"
Ben laughed.
"Right, the same way you saved Mom?"
Jason's lips tightened. "I don't know why you insist on believing something so hurtful," he said. "But very well. Let's pretend for a moment you're right. Why would I have done such a thing?"
"You can't say killed her, Jason. If you can do it, you can say it."
"Perhaps when you start calling me Colonel," Jason replied. "But however we refer to it, why would I have done such a thing?"
"Because she knew you were working with Lumaya," Ben replied. "You needed to keep her quiet."
Jason shook his head. "Think, Ben. If your mother suspected I was working with Lumaya, wouldn't she have told someone? A whole team of Jedi Masters would have come after me, not just your mother."
Ben frowned at this.
"I don't know," Ben said. "Maybe you just wanted to get even."
Jason scowled in disappointment. "You know me better than that. There's only one reason I would ever do anything so difficult. For the good of the galaxy."
An angry fire welled up inside Ben.
"Killing Mom wasn't good for the galaxy."
"And I didn't kill her," Jason replied calmly. "But we're talking hypotheticals here. If you could bring peace to the galaxy by sacrificing your own life, to assassinate me, for instance, would you do it?"
"In a heartbeat," Ben retorted. "Even if it didn't save the galaxy."
"Let's limit ourselves to meaningful sacrifices," Jason said. "Now, if you had to kill someone else instead, someone like your mother, to bring peace to the galaxy, would you do it?"
"That's a stupid question," Ben yelled. "Killing my mother didn't bring peace to anything. The galaxy's more of a mess now than before you did it."
"That's beside the point," Jason said. "And I didn't kill her. I asked if you would. If you would trade your mother's life for galactic peace." Ben fell silent. After a moment, Jason said, "You won't find a trap, Ben. There isn't one." When Ben remained silent, Jason pressed on. "You can't answer because it would be selfish to refuse, even evil. How could you not trade one life to save billions? Your mother would have begged you to if the choice were hers."
"That's not what happened."
Ben could feel his hate slipping away, and with it, his identity.
"You didn't have to kill her."
"And I didn't. But I would have. That's the difference between us. I'm willing to carry that burden." Jason paused and reached over to stroke a muscle node on the side of the embrace. "And that's why this is necessary. To give you the strength to make the same choice."
Ben expected the tendrils to tighten again, or at least to ooze some new kind of toxin that would turn his welts into weeping sores and his weeping sores into boiling abscesses. Instead, the tendrils retracted their barbs and slackened until he was comfortable.
Jason laid a hand on Ben's shoulder and gave it a gentle squeeze. "Now I'm afraid I must hurt you in a way worse than anything the embrace has done." Jason continued to clasp Ben's shoulder, infusing his wounds with soothing force energy. "A short time ago, your father and my sister made a foolhardy attack on the Anakin Solo. Jaina appears to have escaped, but your father's stealth X was destroyed. Ben frowned, not quite able to grasp what Jason was telling him.
So?
So his craft was vaporized, Jason explained. There was no chance to eject.
You think he's dead?
Ben knew that his head should have been reeling and his heart cracking, but the truth was, the only thing he felt was disbelief and hatred. He still had that, even if Jason was telling the truth.
Boy, are you gullible.
Jason's hand clamped down, sending hot fingers of pain through Ben's chest and neck. I was there, Ben. I saw it with my own eyes.
You think you shot him down?
Ben didn't know what he would do if he actually succeeded in making Jason lose control of his anger, only that he had to make something happen.
That's a laugh.
But Jason wasn't taking the bait. He removed his hand and said, Actually, it wasn't me. It was an accident. Friendly fire. Jaina got him. That did shake Ben.
No. You're making it up.
Ben's objection sounded desperate. Even to him, it felt like a cold hand had grabbed his heart and started to squeeze.
I would have felt him die, just like I did when you killed Mom.
Jason shook his head solemnly. How, Ben? Have you felt anything through the Force since you've been here? He took his vibro dagger from his sheath and activated it, then tossed it onto the floor about 2 meters away. Go on, then. Summon that blade and free yourself. Ben reached for the vibro dagger and couldn't find it. He opened himself wide and sensed nothing.
What's wrong?
He gasped.
I can't feel...
Of course not, Jason replied. How long could the embrace have held you had I let you keep the Force?
You can do that? You can separate me from the Force?
Jason gestured at Ben's helpless form. Apparently so.
And now I can't reach out for help,
Ben said.
So when you tell me Dad is dead, I can't find him in the Force. I have to take your word for it.
That's not the reason, Jason said. But I see how you might come to that conclusion. Jason laid his hand on Ben's shoulder again, and the Force came flooding back in a shocking, painful torrent. He sensed a dozen things at once. His Aunt Leia searching for him in the Force, filled with pain and shock and sympathy. His cousin Jaina, down on Kashyyyk, full of sorrow and apology. And now that she sensed him aboard the Anakin Solo, confusion. Saba Sebatine and the other masters relieved by his sudden return to the Force, and they were all reeling, bewildered, and concerned because he was aboard Jason's ship. But mostly, Ben sensed his father. A small, tight presence a deck or two above. He was skulking through the substructures below one of the long-range turbolaser turrets, and he seemed as surprised as everyone else by where Ben had turned up. But there was also a note of reassurance, a promise that he would soon be there to help. At first, Ben couldn't understand why Leia and Jaina and everyone else still seemed so sad. Then it hit him. They couldn't feel his father's presence. Ben was the only one whom his dad was allowing to see him through the Force. Not even Jason had that kind of control.
Neat trick.
Ben didn't realize he'd said this aloud until Jason scowled. It's no trick, Ben. Even I'm not good enough to project emotions into other Force users, Jason said. You're sensing the same thing I am. Everyone knows what happened.
And that's why you think Dad is really dead?
Ben asked cautiously.
Just because everyone thinks so?
I know because I felt him die, Jason said. I'm glad I was able to spare you that particular anguish. It would have done nothing to make you stronger.
Yeah, thanks,
Ben said flatly.
How long ago did all this happen?
Jason smiled. You know I'm not going to tell you that. Ben cocked his head in acknowledgement.
It was worth a shot. It's been about a day. Everybody's still in shock, but they've had time to start worrying about me.
It appears their concerns are misplaced. Your thinking is remarkably clear. Jason glanced at the embrace, then added, All things considered, of course. The smirk in Jason's voice made Ben want to kill him. And he finally realized his father had probably sneaked aboard to do the same thing. It's okay to hate me, Jason said, apparently sensing the drift of Ben's thoughts. But you mustn't be controlled by it. You must make your hate serve you. Ben summoned a laugh, managing to sound bitter if not natural.
I don't hate you, Jason. I pity you.
Jason scowled. I don't appear to be the one in need of pity, Ben.
You will be,
Ben said.
Dad's not dead. He's coming for you.
Jason glanced up at the ceiling, and Ben could feel him reaching out in the force, actively searching for Luke or any other saboteur. Finally, he shook his head and returned his attention to his captive. I'm afraid not, he said. I don't feel any Jedi presence at all, and if I don't, then neither do you. Nothing real, anyway.
That's because he doesn't want you to feel him, Ben said.
He sensed his father very near now, on the same deck and moving fast.
But he's here.
And I suppose you'll help me find him if I let you go? Jason scoffed. Nice try. Ben glimpsed a dark figure stepping into the doorway.
I don't think you'll need any help finding him, Jason. Dad's right behind you.
It had to be a bad dream. Ben sitting there in that overgrown bramble, swaddled in thorn-studded vines, his skin flaking away in purple scales, his eyes burning with a pain-mad gleam. Luke had to be imagining this. Not even Jason would use the embrace on his own cousin. You'll have to do better than that, Ben. Still facing Ben, Jason laughed and threw his hands up in mock terror. Look behind you! That ruse was old when the stars were young. Ben shrugged.
It's your funeral.
It might be, if I were naive enough to let you summon that. Jason pointed at a vibrodagger lying on the deck, about 2 meters in front of Ben. Luke didn't know what it was doing there, whether Ben had attacked Jason with it, or whether Jason had been using it on Ben. But he started to accept that the horrible scene was real. He was, in fact, standing in the doorway of a secret cabin filled with Yuuzhan Vong torture devices, watching his twisted nephew taunt his captive son. Luke didn't give Jason a chance to surrender. He just sprang. Ben's jaw dropped, and Jason started to spin, snatching his lightsaber from his belt and igniting it in the same motion, bringing the emerald blade around high to protect his hardened head. But Luke was attacking low, striking for the kidney to disable in the most painful way possible. Jason's eyes widened. He flipped his lightsaber down in the same moment Luke's met flesh. The tip sank a few centimeters, drawing a pained hiss as it touched a kidney. Then Jason's blade made contact and knocked it aside. Jason completed his pivot and landed a rib-crunching roundhouse. Luke stumbled back, his chest filled with fire. Jason followed the kick with a high slash. Luke blocked and spun inside, landing an elbow smash to the temple that dropped Jason to his knees. He brought his own knee up under Jason's chin, hearing teeth crack and relishing it. He parried a weak slash at his thighs, then drew his blade up diagonally, where his nephew's chest should have been. Except Jason was sliding backward, one hand extended behind him, using the force to pull himself toward a tendril-draped rack in the far corner of the torture chamber. Luke leapt after him, bringing his lightsaber around in a low, clearing sweep. Jason stopped pulling and started to swing his free hand around. Luke was ready, had been expecting this since the fight started. Still flying through the air, he raised his own hand, palm outward, and pushed the force out through his arm to form a protective shield. The lightning never came. Instead, Luke was blindsided by something heavy and spiky, and his body exploded into pain as he slammed into a durasteel wall. He found himself pinned in place, trapped by a bed of thorns Jason had hurled across the cabin. He felt the hot sting of the thorns pumping their venom into him. His hearing faded, and his head began to spin, and he saw Jason, one hand still raised to keep Luke pinned, sneering and taking his time rising. Bad mistake. Luke raised his lightsaber, slashing through the thorn bed as he sprang. Jason scrambled to his feet, barely bringing his weapon up in time to block a vicious downstroke. Luke landed a snap kick to the stomach that lifted Jason a meter off the deck, then followed it with a slash to the neck, which Jason ducked. He came up under Luke's guard, holding his weapon with one hand and driving a force-enhanced punch into Luke's ribs with the other, striking for the same place he had kicked earlier. Luke's chest exploded in pain, and he found himself croaking instead of breathing. Luke struck again with his lightsaber, using both hands and putting all his strength into the attack,
beating his nephew's guard down so far that Jason's emerald blade bit into his own shoulder. Jason kicked at Luke's legs, catching the side of a knee. Something popped, and Luke felt himself going down. On the way, he swept his blade horizontally. Jason screamed, and the smell of scorched bone and singed hair filled the air. Knowing Jason would strike despite the wound, Luke rolled over his throbbing knee and spun back to his feet with a clearing sweep. His blade met Jason's in a shower of brilliant sparks. Luke freed one hand and drove a finger strike at Jason's eyes. Jason turned his head, but Luke's little finger scratched across something soft and bulbous. Jason roared and stumbled away, shaking his head. Luke feinted a dash toward his nephew's blindside. Then, as Jason pivoted to protect his injured eye, Luke hit him with a force wave. Jason went flying, and it required only a soft nudge to steer him into a tendril-draped rack in the far corner. He hit with so much cracking and crashing that Luke worried the rack had broken, but the thin tendrils quickly entwined Jason in a net of pulsing green. Luke started forward, his injured knee buckling each time he put weight on it. The rack's slender tendrils were tightening around Jason, cutting into his flesh and oozing a yellowish irritant that made skin puff up and split. Jason began to slash his lightsaber up and down, cutting the vines away two and three at a time. If Luke wanted to finish this, and it seemed like a good idea, given how battered he was himself, he had only a few seconds. Luke closed to within 2 meters without saying a word. What point would there have been? Jason wasn't going to surrender, and Luke wouldn't have believed him if he offered. It was better to attack quickly, while he still had the advantage. He brought his lightsaber up to strike.
"Wait!"
Ben cried from behind him.
"Let me do it!"
Astonished and appalled, Luke put a little too much weight on his injured knee and fell as it buckled. He rolled beyond the reach of Jason's lightsaber and looked back across the chamber. Ben was still strapped in the embrace, but he had summoned the vibro dagger off the floor and was battling to cut himself free of the chair's lashing tentacles. Luke shook his head. "I don't think so, Ben."
"You have to,"
Ben insisted.
"I deserve it."
"Deserve it?" Luke returned to his feet, far angrier with Jason than he had been just a moment earlier.
"To kill someone?"
"You don't understand,"
Ben insisted.
"It was my fault. If I don't do this..."
"I said no,"
Luke interrupted.
"You're very confused, Ben. We'll talk about this later."
Giving his son no further chance to argue, Luke turned back to Jason, who by now was almost free. Only one leg remained caught, though it was still entwined in half a dozen places. Luke limped forward, circling toward Jason's trapped side. Jason stopped cutting at the tendrils and flung a hand toward the ceiling.
"Dad, look out!"
Luke was already throwing himself to the deck. A tremendous crash sounded from the illumination panel, and the chamber fell instantly dark. He rolled opposite the direction he had just been moving, but wasn't quick enough. The fixture smashed into his head and shoulders, slamming his face into the deck. He heard something crunch in his nose and was instantly choking on his own thick blood. Jason's lightsaber groaned twice, filling that corner of the torture chamber with flickering green light. Luke force-hurled the light fixture off his back, then hobbled to his feet. Jason launched himself over Luke in a high force flip. They exchanged perfunctory attacks as he tumbled past. Then Luke was alone in the corner, watching the green column of his nephew's lightsaber move toward the door. Jason was running. Luke spat out a mouthful of blood and force-leapt after his nephew, at the same time reaching out to drag him back. They came together in a blinding flurry of sparks, their blades colliding faster than the eye could follow, filling the dark chamber with flashing fans of color. Blows came out of nowhere. Luke caught another kick in his knee and found himself calling on the Force to keep his balance. He landed an elbow and felt a bone in Jason's face shatter. Jason stumbled back, groaning, the green light of his lightsaber briefly illuminating Ben's face as the boy struggled to cut himself free. Luke pressed forward, angling toward the embrace to keep Jason away from Ben. Jason fought his way over anyway, placing himself squarely between Luke and the chair, then gave ground and vanished behind the green ribbons his lightsaber was weaving through the darkness. Luke force-leapt after him, knowing that this Jason, the Jason he had caught torturing his son, would not hesitate to take Ben hostage or to kill him. Luke landed half a meter in front of Jason's lightsaber and quickly beat down his nephew's guard, too quickly. When he did not glimpse a face in the light of his own blade, Luke knew something was wrong and stopped. which was exactly what Jason was waiting for, of course. Luke had barely started to turn before a loop of thin tendrils slipped over his head and tightened around his throat, oozing toxin and cutting deep into the flesh. The wound swelled and burned as if it were on fire. Luke whipped his lightsaber around, trying to cut Jason off his back, but Jason was already spinning away, tightening his garrote and placing Luke's body between himself and the deadly blade.
"Should have let me go when you had the chance," Jason snarled. "Now you're done."
Luke slammed an elbow into Jason's ribs, but it was like hitting a permacrete wall. Instead of continuing to fight, he accelerated into the spin, using the force to hurl them both into the nearest wall. Jason hit first, his skull clunking hard into the Durasteel. The garrote loosened a little. Luke dropped his lightsaber, bracing one hand against the other so he could use the strength of both arms to hammer his elbow up under Jason's chin. The garrote went completely slack. Luke followed up with a palm heel to the same target, using the impact to drive himself away from his attacker and buy some maneuvering room. Then Jason let out a blood-curdling scream and stumbled away, a black silhouette vanishing into the darkness of the torture chamber. Luke stepped back in shock and confusion, summoning his lightsaber to hand, but knowing by the surprise and Jason's scream that this was not another trick.
"It's okay, Dad," Ben said from beside him. "It's just me."
Ben took the glow rod from Luke's belt and activated it. Jason was crawling across the torture chamber, the hilt of a vibro dagger protruding from between his shoulder blades. His face was inflamed and misshapen. His clothes were smoking and tattered. A hand-sized rectangle of scorched skull showed through his scalp, and still he was stretching a hand toward his lightsaber. Luke reignited his own lightsaber, then pointed out the door. "R2 is in the hangar prepping a skiff for launch. Go help him while I finish up here."
"No way!"
Ben extended his free hand and summoned Jason's still-ignited lightsaber.
"This kill is mine!"
Ben's words chilled Luke to the core, chilled him and frightened him. He could hear the hatred burning inside his son, feel the darkness swirling in his force aura.
"I said no."
Luke limped after his son and grabbed him by the shoulder.
"You can't surrender to your rage, Ben. I did that with Lumaya, and all it did was make me weak. But if you do now, you'll be lost to the dark side. I feel it in you already."
"I don't care about the dark side."
Ben was still holding Jason's lightsaber, waving it around in careless anger.
"Jason killed Mom, and it was my—"
"Is that what you think?"
Luke interrupted.
"Jason didn't kill Mara. It was Alima. At least that's the way it looks now."
Ben frowned.
"Alima?"
"Jaina and Zek uncovered some evidence putting her near the scene." Luke started Ben toward the door.
"I'll explain on the way back to Kashyyyk. We've got to get out of here because I rigged the turbo lasers to blow."
Ben allowed himself to be pushed across the threshold into the hangar. But instead of starting across the hangar, Ben shined the glow rod back toward the torture chamber, as though he could somehow see Jason behind the Durasteel door, plotting his defense against an attack that was not going to come. At least not today. Luke held his hand out.
"Give me the lightsaber, Ben. It isn't time to finish things with Jason. Not this way."
Ben deactivated the lightsaber, but did not pass it over.
"So we're just going to let Jason get away with it? With burning Kashyyyk and torturing me and everything else?"
"Of course not," Luke said. "But we'll come for him when the time is right. For us."
Ben thought for a moment, then asked,
"You promise?"
Luke nodded.
"We have to stop this madness, and we will, when our judgment isn't clouded by pain and rage."
Ben let out a heavy sigh, then passed the lightsaber over.
"In that case, we really need to get out of here."
He started across the hangar at a run.
"Jason still has his comm link."
The air in the forward infirmary reeked of Bactisolve and scorched flesh, and casualties were jammed 3 and 4 to a bay. Yet Kytus had an entire corner to himself. And not because his injuries warranted it. He had only a few broken bones and some damaged organs. There were patients there who had lost half their limbs to the explosions Luke had caused, and others with third-degree burns over half their bodies. But the triage droid was skillfully directing new patients to every treatment hub except Kytus's.
perhaps because its compassion module could read in their averted glances and angry grimaces the same thing Kaidus felt in their force auras. Hostility, anger, and fear. They blamed him for the sabotage, as though he should have foreseen the detonation of all four long-range turbolaser batteries, as though he had caused it by attacking Kashyyyk in the first place. They were right, of course. Had the Anakin Solo not been setting fire to the Roshirs, Luke would never have tried anything so foolhardy. Nor would the Bothans have come to the Wookiee's aid, along with the Corellians and much of the rest of the enemy's fleets, if infirmary rumors were to be believed. Kaidus had sacrificed the lives and well-being of a couple of thousand crew members to draw the Confederation away from the Battle of Kuat. And he would do it again. Now that he had moved the battle away from the core, Coruscant was no longer at risk, and he had bought the Alliance time to regroup. Now all that remained was to withdraw and let the traitors believe they had driven him back. Kaidus sat up, savoring the fiery bolts of pain that shot through him with the effort, and swung his legs over the side of the gurney. "Where's Orlop?" Kaidus demanded of no one, and everyone in particular. "I asked for my aid 10 minutes ago." Orlop stepped around the partition, one of Kaidus's spare uniforms tucked under his arm and the ever-present datapad in hand. Kaidus pointed at the datapad. "What's the tactical situation?"
"You're going to wish you were still unconscious."
Orlop tapped a few keys on the datapad and passed it over.
"The good news is that your plan worked beyond all expectations."
Orlop wasn't exaggerating. The tactical feed showed the Fifth Fleet, with the Anakin Solo at its center, surrounded by the enemy. The Wookiee fleet was shielding Kashyyyk from any further bombardment, while the Bothans, Corellians, and the remnants of the Kaminoian and Hutt fleets attacked from the rear. "What happened to Bois II and Darklighter?" Kaidus demanded. "They should be relieving us by now."
"Admiral Bois II senses regrets,"
Orlop replied.
"Apparently, he and Admiral Darklighter were ordered to hold their forces inside the core."
Of course. Kaidus didn't need to ask who had issued the order. Cha Nyathol was too good a tactician to overlook an opportunity to have the enemy eliminate her rival, even if it did mean sacrificing a little thing like the Fifth Fleet. I was expecting this betrayal.
"You were?"
Orlop sounded genuinely relieved.
"In that case, you may want to brief Admiral Otoko on your plan. He's given the order to prepare all vessels for scuttle and abandonment."
"Without consulting me?"
"You were unavailable,"
Orlop explained. "I'm available now." Jason slipped off the gurney. Using the force to hold himself upright, Kaidus limped over to the wall comm and opened a channel to the bridge. When the familiar voice of his communications officer answered a moment later, he asked her to connect him to Otoko. While he waited, he took his uniform from Orlop and slowly, painfully, dressed. Finally, the Admiral's surprised voice sounded over the comm speaker.
"Colonel Solo, how are you feeling?"
"Well enough to retain command." Kaidus allowed enough anger into his voice to let Otoko know he did not appreciate having his authority usurped. "And I don't recall giving orders to scuttle the fleet."
"And neither have I, yet."
Otoko didn't seem fazed by Kaidus's displeasure, perhaps because he suspected that soon neither of them was going to be in command of anything.
"But the Wookiees are starting to launch boarding craft, rather than allow our assets to fall into enemy hands."
"Why aren't you attempting to fight free, Admiral?" Kaidus demanded. "If the Fifth is going to be vaped, at least it can take a few Bothans along." The speaker fell silent, and were it not for the steady crackle of turbolaser interference, Kaidus would have assumed the channel had been closed. "Admiral Otoko, I seem to be sensing a problem with my order," Kaidus said. "Is something unclear?"
"No, sir,"
Otoko said.
"It's very clear. All too clear."
"Then there must be a flaw in it," Kaidus said. "What is it?"
The crews,"
Otoko replied.
"There are over 70,000 beings in the Fifth. We can't just order them to their deaths."
Ah. Kaidus had planned to escape in a Stealth X if Nyathol betrayed him. So it had not occurred to him that the crew members of the Fifth might be reluctant to give their lives for the Alliance. "You think the vessel commanders will refuse?"
"With no chance of survival or escape, it's a possibility,"
Otoko said carefully.
destroying a few enemy ships isn't going to seem like a worthwhile sacrifice when the alternative is an honorable surrender.
I suppose not, Kytus admitted. So when the time comes, we should remind them that those are Wookiee boarding parties, and the Fifth has been shielding the Anakin Solo while we burned Kashyyyk. Again, the speaker fell silent, but only for a moment.
I think that will persuade them, Colonel.
I thought it might, Kytus said. Cancel the scuttle preparations and ready the fleet for a penetration attack. I'll give you the coordinates once I've studied.
Excuse me, Colonel?
Orlop shoved the datapad at Kytus again.
But I believe you will find the coordinates fairly obvious.
Kytus took the datapad. His vision was still a little blurry, and all he could see was a tight cluster of unreadable designator codes popping onto the top edge of the screen. For a moment, he didn't understand what Orlop was suggesting. Then the Corellian fleet began to move aside, creating room for the new arrivals to join in the encirclement of the Fifth. Very good, Orlop, he said. Admiral Otoko, we'll make for the seam between the Corellians and the newcomers. If we time this right, we should be able to battle through and save at least a third of our strength. There was a moment of uncomfortable silence. Then Otoko's voice asked,
Battle through, Colonel?
Of course, Kytus said. You don't expect them to let us pass without a fight, do you?
Well, yes, that's exactly what I expect,
Otoko said. Kytus scowled at the datapad. On the little display, the cluster of new arrivals was growing denser by the second, rendering the designator codes more unreadable than ever. Now that he studied it more carefully, the Corellian fleet was moving too abruptly and too far to simply be making room. They were worried about crossfire. Kytus tapped a key, enlarging the image so much that the new arrivals vanished from the display, and he found himself looking at a detailed schematic of the Fifth's battle deployment. Orlop quietly took the datapad from his hands.
It's our side, he said quietly. Those are Novas and battle dragons arriving.
The Hapens? Kytus gasped. My apologies, Admiral. You're quite right. Let's make for the Hapens. I'll be in contact again as soon as I return to the bridge and have access to proper battle intelligence. Kytus picked up his utility belt, then motioned for Orlop to follow, and left the infirmary feeling more cheerful inside than he had in ages. His parents had turned the Wookiees against him. His classmate Lobaka had hurled a shadow bomb at him. His uncle had nearly killed him, and his cousin had planted a vibro dagger so near his heart that the handle had twitched in time to his pulse. But Tenel Ka had come to his rescue. Kytus opened himself to the Force long enough to reach out to her in thanks, and was astonished to find her not far away on Hapes, but nearby with her fleet. She had come to his aid personally. Queen Mother Tenel Ka needs to talk to me, Kytus said. Prepare a secure channel to the Dragon Queen and contact me when you have her.
Right away, Colonel, Krova said. But it will take a short time to match our scrambling protocols. The Hapens have not been very forthcoming.
I'm aware of the difficulties, Kytus said. I won't hold you responsible for the delay.
Thank you, Colonel. I'll ping you when we have Her Majesty on the channel.
By then, they were leaving the infirmary. It took a full minute before they reached a corridor that wasn't jammed with casualties and medical droids, and another 30 seconds to reach a shooter station. They descended a short ramp, stepped into a crew car. A moment later, the car lurched into motion, dropping down a blue durasteel tunnel into the network of shooter tubes. Kytus settled back into his seat, sinking into his pain, and was surprised at how much he just wanted to sleep. The fight with Luke had drained him, of course, but this exhaustion was emotional and spiritual. He was growing ever more isolated as his friends and family deserted him, and his followers began to see him as something more than human. Kytus closed his eyes and let his mind drift into the future, not seeing it through the Force, but imagining it with his heart. That was when his comlink pinged for attention. When he checked the display and saw that Krova already had a channel open to Tenel Ka, his weariness vanished, and even the pain of his injuries began to diminish. He activated the mic, then said, Queen Mother, what a pleasant surprise. I knew the Alliance could count on you.
The Alliance, yes, Jason. But I am afraid that this is no longer true for you.
What? Kytus's heart did not sink, nor did his anger well up inside him, because he simply did not believe what he was hearing.
Our signal must have gotten scrambled. It sounded like you said I can't count on you.
I'm afraid you heard correctly. In fact, I'm asking for your surrender.
My surrender? Can you hold on for a second? I've got to check something out.
Without awaiting her reply, Kaidas turned to Orlop. We are in a crew car on the way to the bridge, correct?
I am speaking to Queen Mother Tenel Ka over the comlink, am I not?
We are, Orlop said, nodding. I'm sorry, Colonel, but you're not hallucinating.
That's what I was afraid of. Kaidas reopened the channel. Look, Tenel Ka, I can't explain over a comm channel, but I had good reasons for slipping away from the Battle of Kuat.
I'm sure you did. You always have good reasons for breaking your promises.
Kaidas's anger began to rise. I was trying to save the home fleet, and much, much more. You'll understand when I can explain.
Perhaps so. You might even be able to explain why you took control of the Academy on Ossus after you promised to make peace with Master Skywalker. But how can you explain sending Ben to assassinate Chief Omos, Jason? A 14-year-old boy?
I didn't, Kaidas said. He misinterpreted a report and assumed...
I am a Hapen Queen. You won't deceive me with equivocation, Jason. It is an insult that you even try, and there can be no excuse for what you're doing to Kashyyyk. Setting the Roshiers ablaze? What are you thinking?
I am thinking that the Wookiees betrayed us, Kaidas replied. I'm thinking that they brought this on themselves. Everything else I can explain only in person.
Good. I shall be looking forward to that,
Tenel Ka said.
You will instruct Admiral Atoko to follow my father's orders, and I'll send a skiff for you. Kindly present yourself unarmed.
You'll send a skiff? Kaidas fumed. Tenel Ka, you can't believe I'm going to surrender. To you or to anyone else.
I am hoping you will.
Tenel Ka's voice was sad, but firm.
Because it is going to break my heart to open fire on you.
Kaidas' rage exploded inside him. Even you? He gasped. I thought you were made of stronger stuff, Tenel Ka. I thought you understood what I'm trying to accomplish.
She's plenty strong, kid,
said the familiar voice of Han Solo.
It's killing her to do this, and I don't get it. Personally, I'd just as soon blast you back to Adams and pretend you died in that fight with Onimi.
Dad?
The word felt strange in Kaidas' mouth, as though we were using it to address someone else's father.
I should have known you were behind this. I suppose Mom is there too.
Right beside him, Leia confirmed. Listen to Tenel Ka. I don't want to see another son die.
Don't worry about that, Kaidas said. I wouldn't think of dying before I make you pay for this. Both of you,
Tenel Ka said.
I'm asking you one last time, Jason. Please, don't make me do this.
I'm sorry, Your Majesty, Kaidas replied. I have no choice.
He closed the channel and turned to find his aide already speaking into his own comlink.
Reinforce shields forward, Orlop was saying. Expect fire from...
The order came to a crackling end as the Hapen's first salvo hit, overloading the Anakin Solo shields and flooding the ship's systems with dissipation static. The crew car slowed to a crawl as power was diverted to critical systems. The tunnel switched to emergency illumination, plunging Kaidas and his aide into cold red twilight.
Aboard Sith Meditation Sphere.
Aleem Arar had never seen a moon explode. But if she had, she felt sure it would have looked a lot like the Fifth Fleet did at that moment. With the enemy pummeling it from every side, the once mighty fleet had drawn itself into a tight little bundle of mushrooming fire and flashing sheets of heat. The deaths were still panging through the Force, in the dozens rather than the hundreds or the thousands. But that would soon change. The seam toward which the fleet was angling, between the Bothans and the Hapens, was closing fast, and Aleema did not need a battle forecast to know it would be a death trap for any vessel that attempted to squeeze through. This was all the fault of those Darth wannabes, hiding on Korriban. They had made her wait 3 days so they could train her in the use of the meditation sphere and prepare the gift to Jason. And what had their gift turned out to be? The holocron of Darth Vectivus, filled with such pearls of wisdom as never borrow money from someone powerful enough to make you pay, and let your employees know you trust them, then watch them. Who was this guy? Their bookkeeper? Ship reminded her that there were many forms of domination. Darth Vectivus had been a middle manager in a galactic mining conglomerate. He had controlled the lives of tens of thousands of laborers and accrued a vast personal fortune far in excess of his personal needs or the capacity of his salary to provide.
"And that will help Jason conquer the galaxy how?"
Alima demanded.
"Not that it matters. Look at the mess he's gotten himself into. If he doesn't die, he'll be the laughingstock of Coruscant. He'll be as useful to us as this."
Alima hurled the Vectivus holocron in the general direction of the battle. Ship formed a small pocket in the transparent wall and caught it, then informed her that the situation was hardly hopeless.
"Look, we are very impressed with your plasma streams and antimatter pellets, but they aren't enough to take on four fleets,"
Alima said.
"Are you mad?"
Ship thought it probably was, since it was beginning to take a liking to her. But that was beside the point. The Emperor-to-be was trying to break free. All they needed to do was open a hole for him.
"Us and what fleet?"
Choose one, Ship suggested.
There are four.
Alima lifted her brow.
"We can take over an enemy fleet?"
She gasped.
"They didn't tell us you could do that."
Control, not command,
Ship clarified. And only because they have no meditation spheres of their own. They have no defense. Alima smiled.
"It's always best that way, isn't it?"
Aboard the Anakin Solo.
Kydus did not need battle meditation to know he had already lost the Fifth Fleet, and to know that only minutes remained before the Anakin Solo was lost as well. The turbo laser fire was coming not in blossoms, or rolling barrages, or even in sheets. It was simply there, filling every square centimeter of his observation bubble with fiery, undying brilliance. The color flashed from red to gold to blue, depending on the angle of contact and the condition of the shields. But the intensity never wavered, and he knew that his own gunners had to be firing blind. Even the Anakin Solo's top-grade sensor filters were no match for this kind of blast static. Still, Kydus felt a nagging hope, something pulling at him through the Force, urging him not to give up. He squeezed past his meditation chair, which had been turned to face outward but not yet repaired, then slipped over the arm into the seat. He began to concentrate on his breathing, clearing his mind of all extraneous thoughts so he could expand his battle awareness. Orlop stepped up behind the chair and snuffled for attention. "Not now," Kydus said. "I need to meditate."
"Of course you do," Orlop replied. "I just wanted to report that your Stealth X is ready for launch."
"Thank you." Orlop did not go away. "Is there something else?" Kydus asked.
"Admiral Atoko is insisting that you give him permission to scuttle the fleet. He claims he has the authority to do it without your approval."
"Does he really think the Wookiees are going to board through that?" Kydus waved at the firestorm outside. "Tell him to hang on for 2 minutes. If he hasn't heard from me by then, he's free to do as he wishes."
"Very well,"
Orlop said, then continued to hover.
"What?" "Your Stealth X has room for only one person, Colonel,"
he said.
"How am I to escape?"
"I'm trying to work on that now," Kydus said.
"But I need to meditate."
Orlop retreated quickly and quietly. Kydus resumed his breathing exercise, expanding his Force awareness to encompass his own fleet, then all fleets in the battle, and finally, when he still hadn't located the source of his nagging hope, the entire theater of combat. The hope grew stronger, summoning him in the direction of the Bothan fleet, urging him to come toward it. The hope continued to pull, so hard now that Kydus almost felt as if he were being physically dragged. Kydus stopped and followed the feeling to its source, to well beyond the Bothan fleet, where he found a broken, twisted presence that had been inserting itself into his struggles far too often of late. Alima Rar. But something was different. Her powers seemed greatly magnified, far too ancient and somehow even darker than before. Alima continued to pull at him, filling her presence with the promise of salvation and victory and
Well, some other things in which he had no interest. It would be crazy to rush the Bothan fleet, as she was urging, and the Twi'lek was hardly someone to be trusted with one's life, or destiny. But the maneuver would be the last thing the enemy expected. And what was there to lose? Kytus dropped back into his chair. Orlop!
Yes, Colonel?
Orlop stopped behind him.
Have you thought of a way for me to escape?
We're all going to escape, Kytus said. Have Admiral Atoko turn on the Bothan fleet. He's to confront it head-on, full acceleration. Any vessels too damaged to keep pace will act as our rear guard. Starfighters will jump to Rendezvous Alpha.
We're attacking?
Now, Orlop, Kytus replied. If Admiral Atoko gives that scuttle order, you won't need an escape vessel.
At once, Colonel.
Orlop scurried away. As Kytus sank back into his battle meditation, a desperate craving for sleep rose inside him. His body was telling him that it needed to heal. Of course, Kytus had no time for rest. He expanded his force awareness again and found himself momentarily lost in the maelstrom of fear and bitterness that was the Fifth Fleet. He began to sift through the emotions, seeking out those who felt most calm, those who seemed to be in command, and started to brush them with his confidence and hope. Soon, small eddies of calm and composure began to swirl through the storm. Kytus turned his attention on the heart of the fleet, where he could feel Admiral Atoko's defiant presence fuming over his orders, no doubt contemplating whether to issue the scuttle order anyway. Kytus filled his thoughts with the conviction that they would escape, that it was his destiny to survive and unite the galaxy. Then began to press down on Atoko's presence. The Admiral seemed startled at first, then confused, but his resistance quickly yielded to obedience, and Kytus continued to press. A few moments later, a ripple of astonishment rolled through the force, then quickly became determination as the fleet changed course. The brilliance outside seemed to slide across the observation bubble for a moment, then gradually broke into individual blossoms of energy as the enemy gunners began to worry about overshots hitting a friendly fleet. Kytus began to glimpse individual bolts of turbolaser fire fanning out from the Bothan batteries. As the Fifth struck back, tiny blossoms of color erupted against the distant darkness. A shudder raced through the force as the Alliance cruiser Redma suddenly lost its shields and came apart, and whirls of panic and anguish enveloped other vessels as they took hits and began to spit beings and equipment into the void. But overall, the crews of the Fifth remained focused on the attack, too absorbed in their duties to fall prey to the fear and fatalism that had crippled them earlier. Incredibly, the Bothans did not fall back. They simply held their position and continued to exchange fire with the Fifth, which, even battered as it was, had them outgunned, outnumbered, and outclassed. Concerned the Bothans were laying a trap, Kytus extended his force awareness to their fleet and was consumed by a rush of fiery pain as his body struggled to remain functional. He opened himself completely to the force, drawing it in through the power not of his anger or fear. He was too exhausted and sad to feel either, but through his faith in his destiny, through the love that gave him the strength to serve that destiny, through his love not only of Alana, but also of Tenel Ka, of Luke and Ben and even Mara, of Jaina and his parents, and all the others who had betrayed him, of his allies and enemies, and his dead mentors. He drew the Force in through his love of them all, of the entire galaxy he was sacrificing himself to save. The pain remained, but with it came the strength Kytus needed to remain conscious. When he focused his attention on the Bothan fleet again, he began to sense an odd uncertainty among the commanders, and a dark power behind it. Alima Rar was somehow influencing them, instilling in their minds an atypical indecision. Kytus suspected they were thinking he was too smart to do this, that surely he knew all they had to do was fall back and let their allies catch the Fifth in a devastating crossfire. He began to press down on them, affirming that belief. Yes, he knew. Kytus' vision darkened around the edges, and he began to feel lightheaded. Still, he continued to exert pressure, trying to build on the indecision Alima had instilled in them, hoping they would conclude that he wanted them to retreat. That was all it took. The Bothan presences grew decisive and the fans of their turbolaser fire started to expand as they accelerated toward the fifth. Then Kaidus' vision closed in, and he felt himself sinking even deeper into his battle meditation, completely through it, to a time not long in the future when this war would be over, when the galaxy would be safe and calm, when he would once again have his family and friends there beside him, helping him to rule in justice and peace.
Aboard the Dragon Queen.
That was the dumbest move I've ever seen, Han declared to anyone listening, which given his volume was everyone in the great parlay chamber of Tenel Ka's flagship, the Dragon Queen. And I've seen some pretty dumb moves. What in blazes made you advance when they turned on you?
Admiral Babo's yellow eyes flashed gold, but he accepted the indignity with a polite smile that managed to bear only the tips of his Bothan fangs. Sitting at the conference table with them were a couple of dozen brass hats from the impromptu coalition that had just tried to blast Jason into a bad memory.
We believed it was an Alliance feint, Babo explained. It never dawned on us that he would intend to carry through with such a foolhardy attack.
It couldn't have been that foolhardy. It worked.
Like nearly everyone else who had watched Jason's miraculous escape a few hours earlier, Han was still trying to figure out how the Bothans had let it happen.
All you had to do was fall back. We would have had him trapped.
Which the enemy certainly realized, Babo replied. Your son is a master tactician, Captain Solo. We had to account for that in our thinking.
Leia laid a calming hand on Han's arm, then said, Jason was lucky. He took a gamble, assuming you would overthink the situation, and you did exactly that. There may also have been some force pressure involved, Luke added from the end of the table. The Colonel may be using ancient battle meditation techniques to confuse his opponents. Babo's ears pricked up.
That would explain a lot, and it would give the Confederation even more reason to invite Kashyyyk, the Hapen Consortium, and the Jedi Order into our coalition.
Tenel Ka roused herself from her poised silence at the head of the table, then said,
I hope Botha Wee hasn't misinterpreted the actions of the Hapen Consortium here today.
She had used her Force talents to hide all indications of the tears she had shed after firing on Jason. But the pain still showed in the restrained quality of her gestures.
In no way do we share or condone the Confederation's recent aggression, and the Galactic Alliance retains our full support.
Babo brought his bushy brows together.
But you attacked Colonel Solo!
Colonel Solo is not the Alliance,
Tenel Ka replied simply.
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Star Wars, Legacy of the Force, Inferno, by Troy Denning. This program was produced, directed, and abridged by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars, Legacy of the Force, Inferno is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2007, all rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music published by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation, all rights reserved.